Hello, everybody. It's Mary Lynn Harris here of Hard at Work and, on the Creating an Impactful Legacy podcast show. And today, I have a very special guest all the way from UK. Can you imagine? She traveled all the way to the US to have a conversation with me. So anyway, Suzuki, if you'd like to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. So Sakshi here. Introductions are always tricky, right? You're figuring out which parts of your life you want to share with the audience. I'm a psychologist by education, but by profession, I think many different things. So consultant, occupational psychologist by profession. I had my own startups when I was quite young, from the age of 17. So entrepreneurial in that sense as well. I help a lot of startups today invest and govern and build strategy for themselves, all of them based on artificial intelligence, because that's where my life started as well, with artificial intelligence in the workplace. And I do a lot of charity work, because I started my own charity when I was 17 again. So any given day looks that crazy for me. it has all of these different hats that I wear, and elements in my life, which often spill into the weekends. So that's a little bit about me, I guess.
Yeah. I'm just, as you're talking artificial intelligence, how does that play a role in business? Like you're saying, you help people start up. So if that's the direction, what does that look like?
My first startup, which is quite an helpful example, is it was using artificial intelligence for hospitality sector and for restaurants, and looking at how this technology can improve their number of people who come into the restaurant and their experience when they order food with them. The startups that I work with use AI to build engagement for employees, that can be through nudging, behavior, that can be through different algorithms that they put in place for employees to talk to managers. For some other organizations, it's much bigger than that. It's about changing or creating a whole industry based on artificial intelligence, from like gaming to programming to NFTs. So it's a wide portfolio.
Yeah, sounds like it's very in depth and very broad based, so I guess I would guess that your psychology degree really would help a lot in that intelligence, artificial Correct. Intelligence.
Correct. Yeah, very rightly guessed. And that is something that a lot of people feel that there's no connection in. But actually, my degree and my education as psychology has helped me even more. Than some people who are from that educational background but don't really know how to sell the tech or what to do with the tech.
Right.
So, absolutely. It's come in handy.
Yeah. Because I can imagine that whatever we have experience in, whatever skill set, there's so many things we can take our skill set and spread it around to other industries or technical or non-technical uses, right?
Precisely.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your nonprofit and how does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess like most people would have figured it out by now that I'm not from the UK. I'm from India,
right?
Which is where I grew up. And I was doing everything that any other teenager was doing, going out with friends and looking at my passions and hobbies and interests, and a lot of them were around arts and dance and whatnot. And I remember specifically one day feeling like I need to, do some new activity. And there was this social service club that was in our college, in our school, that was working. It's called Road to the International. A lot of people must be familiar with it. It's worldwide. Yeah. And I remember my friend saying, she's signing up for it, if I want to come in. And I said, I'm not philanthropist. I'm not a selfless kind of a person who is like kind at heart. I'm more of a, leader. I'm more of a dynamic person. So it's not for me.
Yeah.
But, you know, like most teenagers, I did what she was doing because she was my friend, blah, blah, blah. Ended up joining it. And I actually realized that a lot of the social work was about leadership and management and coordination and collaboration, all the things that I liked.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was more satisfying than, you know, leading, you know, a dance society or leading like a debate group for me, because it gave me something back that was bigger than me.
Right.
And 2 or 3 years working into that, you know, through my college life as well, I figured out that although people like myself and many other youth volunteers want to help, we don't really know how to help. We have no guidance. We come in as we come in with, you know, whatever skill set we have. And we go out and we are thinking of, you know, changing the lives of these people that we talk to, you know, blood donors or tree plantation drives or education. And I often said to myself, we are probably creating more issues than solving, you know, because we don't really know what we are doing. Our body language, our words can be too harsh without us realizing we have no guidance on what to do. So that's when I started my charity. And my charity, it wasn't a charity, to be honest. It was a project, and it was all about giving the right guidance
to
people who are making an impact.
Mm-hmm.
And the basic fundamental was I would invite people, you know, from the industry that I went out and made networks with as a 17-year-old.
Right.
And say, can you give some guidance, you know, can you come in and do a session and guide the volunteers? What are they doing incorrectly? What do they need to be mindful of? You know, these were psychologists, these were confidence building people, and these were marketing people. And it was amazing. Like, I had 300 volunteers. And these people stayed with me right up until COVID, which meant I had 100% volunteer retention rate. And it just doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't.
people just leave all the time. And, you know, in hindsight, a lot of it was attributed to the fact that I was investing in volunteers as much as they were investing then in the planet.
Right.
Which is, you know, such an easy thing to think about for organizations where people are paid and there is an expectation that if you're paying them and they're working for you, you will upskill them.
Yeah.
But there is no expectation like this in unpaid voluntary work.
Right.
These people are actually saving the planet, right?
Yeah.
You would want to invest in them a bit more than people who are destroying it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was a charity.
Yeah. So were you in the Rotaractors or Rotary itself?
So I was a Rotaractor, now a Rotary.
Okay.
Which has been quite a journey itself. Although the project, it became a flagship project for Rotary in Delhi, in my district. But now it has become sort of larger than life and gone out of the Rotary family as well. And we do different things with the projects now. So,
So did you find that because you provided education for your volunteers that they're more willing to hang out with you rather than just always looking at how much you have to pay, you know, kind of thing?
My whole project was based on zero pay, zero cost model. Mm-hmm. So nobody paid a dime ever, and I never asked for a dime.
Right.
Everything was zero cost. Everything was based on reuse and recycle. So I think money was never an issue, just because the way we were set up. I think people were hanging out with me more because, and nobody has asked me this question before, but so this one interaction I remember really well. One of the first people who joined my project,
right?
I was going around in the summer months of India in May and June around different campuses and parks and gardens and just gathering people and saying what I had to say, you know.
Yeah.
And people were gathering and listening in, and then we would, you know, whoever was interested, we would go and sit in a cafe and speak.
Right.
And this was my only strategy. I didn't have, you know, a big auditorium. You didn't
have a budget or anything like that.
You know? It wasn't like that. And so I remember one of these conversations, a group of really inspiring, really motivated women in STEM degrees sitting there saying, we want to help.
Yeah.
And the conversation went on for an hour. I told them about my vision and what we're going to do. And then as I sort of got up to leave and be like, okay, thank you for listening. You know, give me your details. Let's get in touch. One of them just held my hand and she said, no, tell us more. Sit down, tell us more. And I just looked at them and said, what do you want to know? And they were like, tell us about you. Like, what are you doing? You know, what is your life like? How do you manage so many things? Where is the time coming from? What is the project management skills? Where did you pick it up? How do you do networking? All these questions.
Yeah.
And for me, that became something that I did on a daily basis then, just speaking to people day in and day out about how am I managing things? How are things going? What is my next step? Things like that.
Yeah.
And that's why I guess people just stayed.
Yeah.
The project itself had a lot of catchment area, I would say.
Yeah.
So because I knew what I don't like as a volunteer myself,
yeah,
I made sure that these volunteers don't have to face that. So very, very, very simple things, you know. One thing was don't travel more than 10 minutes. So I remember in my volunteering years, we would travel like 3 hours, 2 hours sometimes just to get to the people who we needed to help.
Yeah.
Because Delhi is a big city and travel is difficult, you know, it's long and scary journeys.
Yeah.
So I always said, you don't need to do that. You can help people who are in 10 minutes of walking distance. There's always somebody who needs help who is in 10 minutes of walking distance. Mm-hmm. So that was the first rule, you know, don't pick up communities to educate and to help who are more than 10 minutes walking distance.
Yeah.
The second thing was I would make sure that people don't have to choose between college degree and volunteering, because that's another reason why people dropped out, you know.
Right.
I have too many classes and it clashes with the timings. Yeah. And I don't know like exactly how I will manage my time. So that involved giving a lot of time management sessions, sharing my strategies with them. One of the techniques I had that I still share is called burning the rice technique, is how do you multitask, which was quite funny and quite the hit. and the third thing was don't spend money. So if you need tools to help, community can come together and give you those tools. And it worked for 6 years. We never even had to buy a pen, you know.
Yeah.
People reusing and recycling everything.
So. Yeah. So what was your big project that you started?
It was around education. So we were partnering with NGOs, with government schools. So in India, government schools are low funded schools,
right?
Which don't have much resources and support. So we were partnering with those government schools, with not-for-profits who were already in the equal education sector.
Right.
And my volunteers would go in as teachers, as admin help, as, you know, activities for these students.
Okay.
But the main aim was to really bring back a lot of this population into the schools, because we had high dropout rates.
Yeah.
In those years, people were, asking their kids to not go to school, instead help with labor and wage workers and things like that. So bringing these people back to school, bringing the entire family back to school. So that's something we did differently. We didn't just bring the students back or the kids back. We brought the adults back to school. We brought the women back to school. We brought the males of the family back to school. We went to the places that they worked and used their infrastructure. So if they were working at a university as a janitor, we would go to the university 6 p.m., make them stay back, bring their kids in and teach them there. So that was the idea, you know, get the whole family educated.
Right. Yeah, because, you know, it's kind of interesting, you know, just from history. I mean, I don't obviously have the experience that you've had, but like you were saying, in your culture, you know, if you have a farm, the kids go to work the farm, you know, you can't go to school, whatever, you know, that type of thing. And it's kind of funny too, because even as a kid growing up, going to school, I'm like, oh my God, I wish my parents had a farm so I don't have to come to school. You know, so it was, but yeah, I wouldn't want to be, you know, working a farm all day long and not have school, you know, at the same time. So it's a different culture, different ethnic outlook on life, right? So I applaud you for that. That's really very cool that you just kind of met the people where they were and just said, okay, how can we support you where you are, you know, kind of thing. Yeah. So, yeah. So you did that for how long? Till COVID started?
Yes, right up until COVID, because we couldn't obviously go in anymore and meet these people, which is when things changed.
Yeah.
For the project, and we did things differently. So we stopped the education part of it. Happily, most of my volunteers still do it.
Yeah.
But I took a different direction with Project Leap.
Right. So now you're just more or less doing what now? Are you going to pick it up again, or are you just focusing on helping people start their own business?
So the direction it took was very interesting. So within those years of being with my volunteers and helping, I obviously had good networks with a lot of different charities around the world.
Right.
And they always asked me, how did you retain 100% volunteers? That was the biggest point. And like I said, it just doesn't happen. So that was interesting to me. So I remember in June 20, when did COVID happen? 2020, wasn't it?
1920, yeah.
Yeah. So in exactly when we were in lockdown, and I was like we can't do Leap, Project Leap, how we used to with education.
Yeah.
What can I do? You know, how can I help? And that's when the idea came, and I started training volunteers of other social organizations.
Okay.
And these were skill-based trainings.
Right.
So, I mean, we were the first sort of organization to do this in the world, to work as a third party who can help your volunteers.
Right.
Obviously, still a complete charity-based, no monetary benefits there at all. And that's exactly what I did. I started working in Nepal, Sri Lanka, all online, India, US, Australia, London, so many different countries, working with different volunteer groups, youth volunteers, asking them what their skill differences are, training needs are, and then training them based on that.
Mm. I have some groups that I definitely refer you to. Some Rotary groups.
Of course. Rotary has always been such a close companion. You know, they say once a Rotarian, always a Rotarian. So everywhere I go, I still work with Rotary groups and Rotrak groups. So it's always nice.
Yeah. So cool. So where are you then in your business, in that you're doing the other type of other focus?
So this is what I'm doing with the charity project kind of a work. And with that comes a lot of research as well that I've been doing. Of late, I've tried to combine these different elements of my life, because one human, and I've juggled them for so long that now I'm tired of juggling.
Yeah.
So with my businesses, I'm still working with incredible, incredible startups who work in this AI psychology realm. You know, a lot of my work is with pure hard tech guys
and
who know how to make it but just don't know how to sell it or talk about it, which is where I come in with, you know, a good understanding of both sides of the coin.
Right.
And what I've done of late is combine this with my social work, in the sense, introduced the field of humanitarian psychology. I have a lovely colleague in New Zealand who brought this field into place many, many years ago, called humanitarian psychology, which is using your degree of psychology for social impact.
Right.
And 2 years ago, when I was, you know, trying to find my career path and merge some things together, this is when this field came up for me, and I said, well, I've been doing this for a year, so why not give it the name? And today, you know, I've written like research on it and I've worked with people on it. And I'm really just trying to bring the field to the UK and Europe and say, how can you use your degree, whatever it is, you know, to be something bigger than your 9-to-5 job or to be something bigger than you. And I have seen that with tech and with my startups that I work with. By a rule, all the startups I work with do have a social impact side to them. I have seen that with psychology and psychologists and them trying to create a bigger impact. I've obviously seen that with the social service sector and different kind of volunteers coming in from different degrees and encouraging them to use their degree for social work as well. So it's been interesting.
Yeah, sounds pretty incredible. I'll have to get you to come and maybe do a talk or something soon. But anyway, so what do you think you mentioned a few things about your clients have the biggest challenges, that they know what they do, but they don't know how to deliver it or tell their story so that people want to say, I want in, right? So what is some of the other things that you find or the best clients maybe perhaps that you'd like to work with?
That is such a great question, to be honest. For me, like the way I choose who I work with is always with that conversation and always with the impact that they are trying to create. A lot of the people I work with have some very, very crazy ideas, you know, ideas that perhaps you think are a little bit too out there, but that's exactly what gets me excited.
Right.
I also see a little bit of myself in most of the people I work with. Not entirely me. I don't want mini-me's in the world, but I see a little bit of, you know, that risk-taking ability to say yes to different things in people who have been very successful and who have created success for me as well, you know, as an investor or as an advisor in their startups. So for me, like those kinds of clients are the best to work with. Interestingly, it's also those people who don't know everything,
right?
You know, where you can actually see that there is space to add value, there is space to bring in something different,
right?
I think growing up, because of my own experiences with tech and startup life, I can see why some kind of people, like for example, some people from a psychology background always feel inhibited or shy to talk to people with a tech or an economics background.
Yeah.
Because they feel like the language doesn't match and you know, how will you come on the same page? And their thinking is different. Yes, their thinking is different, but that's where you can add value is when there's that collision and you don't speak the same language and one is a very black and white lawyer tech person and the other is a very gray area psychology social work person. So those people are very, very interesting for me to speak to, you know, who come from a completely different background than I do. It's always a challenge because then I have to go in, study a lot, you know, research a lot so I can make sense. But it's always good.
I like the idea, like you were saying, the crazier idea, the better, because there's more room in there than just saying, I want to get this many clients. Like, there's no room or space to grow in that space.
Absolutely.
You know, crazier it is.
And I have to say that I am quite privileged to be in a position where I can choose and look at different startups and say where I'm going to invest my time. Appreciate not everybody has that, but I think where we can, and you know, I was at a point of life where I didn't have that either, you know. I had to just accept every kind of work that I was getting,
right?
But I think even in those instances there is so much opportunity for you to find out what else can you do, you know, how can you make this better, what you're working with, even if people are reinventing the wheel, how can you add the sort of salt innovation there? What are the spices that you can bring in? That's, I think, a question to never stop asking.
Very important. Very important. Well, I really like your optimism and your go-getter and the wild thing. My thing when I first started kindness was world kindness. And I have a really simple solution, but how do you motivate people to do it? That's the other challenge, right? So, you know, if I just firmly believe if we each did three kind acts a day, that we could have world kindness real quick. But, you know, it's just like, okay, how do you incorporate that, right?
Absolutely. That is something that I've been working on as well of late. You know, that kindness, and that's I think a major point of connection between you and me as well. Because I was just saying this to someone very recently as well, is I got a title in 2018 called the UNESCO Kindness Leader. And as an 18-year-old, it didn't mean much.
Right.
It meant something to be connected to UNESCO and to be called a leader.
Yeah.
But the word kindness itself didn't mean much, because when you are in the act of doing something, you very rarely realize the impact you're creating. It's only hindsight that helps you see that impact.
Yeah.
And that's true for a lot of people that I work with as well, is because they're creating such a high level of impact, they don't realize what they're doing.
Right.
Somebody tells them, you did this, you know?
Yeah. Great job.
Great job, right?
Yeah.
And so, of course, over the years, a lot of people have invited me to speak about kindness and what it means. And I've always just put a finger up in the wind and said, this is what it means to me today.
Yeah.
Tomorrow it could change. And that's the thing about kindness, is pinning it down to one boxy definition is just not the style of kindness, you know. I can tell you what it is not, and everybody intuitively knows what it is.
Yeah.
But to define it is such a hard job.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, over the years, who is thinking and talking about kindness has changed.
Yeah.
You know, it was just people like you and me, or people in social work who talked about kindness. Today, like, organizations and leaders are talking about kindness when it has become a buzzword. So for me, like, the challenge is, how do you keep this going instead of making it short-lived? And that's when, you know, the fact that I have a different kind of background as well than just psychology helps, is I'm thinking of it as an investor, and I'm saying, I would only care about kindness if it made the organization more investable.
Yeah.
So what I'm doing now is I've linked kindness to ESG, which is environment, social, governance. It's a framework or a model that investors use around the world to invest in a business, to see how investable a business is. And if we can link kindness to ESG and figure out how can increase in kindness lead to a better ESG?
Yeah.
That's when people will listen.
Yeah.
You can't expect business people to suddenly drop the thought about profit and power and value and be like completely nirvana human beings. You know, they will always think about these things. It's a business after all.
Yeah.
So for me, again, it's going to the place where they already are and helping them from there.
Yeah.
And I've linked kindness and ESG to figure out a way to help businesses.
Yeah, that's great. No, because they all want an ROI on it, like return on investment. If I'm going to invest in kindness or implement it in my business, what ROI am I going to get? And I think there's lots of ROI results out there already, but there's still so many people just think, oh, that's just a fluff word, or, you know, how's it going to, you know, affect myself? Or I'm really not interested to my employees or being kind to them. I'm more invested in what I want, you know. And so you have all this mixed, you know, situations where I don't think, like you were saying, like, you go out and talk to people and have a conversation, what it means and what does it look like? And I think if more people would be probably willing to sit down and have a conversation, it might be better.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. It always comes down to having a conversation, because you're right that a lot of times when I talk about kindness, words like vulnerability, authenticity, weakness, sort of just follow naturally.
Yeah.
And I think it's about changing the narrative to say, can words like power, price, profitability, purpose follow kindness as well?
Yeah.
So for me, it's about changing that narrative.
Yeah.
It's going to take a long time. I mean, people have boxed kindness into a one-dimensional helping someone when they're down in the dumps kind of a thing. But yeah, it is more than that, for sure.
Yeah, 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 for sure. Well, I've really enjoyed our conversation and I'd love to do it again another time, but time is ending. So do you have any final words that you'd like to say?
It is always interesting. I've really enjoyed our conversation because you asked some really good questions that I haven't been asked before. And it is surprising, you know, if you're getting like new questions after 7-8 years in the industry, it's always nice.
Yeah.
I think for me, when it comes to last words, it's always been about asking anybody who's listening, you know, or looking at it to say, like, please don't be passive. Just reach out and yeah, tell me, like, any words you want to associate with kindness, you know, how can we do that for you?
Yeah.
In the larger sort of aspect of things, or really wherever you are in life and whatever you're doing, it'll be so good to hear people's narratives and, yeah, and how they are coming together.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's all that my work is based on, is people's narratives and
yeah,
how that's changing and how we can help that.
Yeah, have a conversation about it all. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for joining me today, Jessica. And we'll be chatting with you very soon again, I'm sure. So, okay, you have a great night. I know it's late for you.
All good. And thank you. I look forward to speaking to you again.
Yeah. Okay, great. And in ending, just be kind to each other. That's all we have. So that's my final word.
Beautiful.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.